Till I'm tiptoed you.com. The podcast about pop culture, black history, and spirituality. Yeah. It's about to be a great vibe. Dr. Tip. Gonna take it away. Till I'm tiptoed you.
Hey y'all, hey, it's your girl Tip. Thank you for joining me for another edition of Tell 'Em Tip Told You. I have a question for you. What do the state of Georgia's HBCUs, the state of Georgia's public schools, and Tennessee have in common right now? Stick with me through this episode, and I hope I can get you there. So, as you can see, I'm back. I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I'm going to be completely transparent. It was a little bit of a struggle. And maybe towards the end of this episode, I'll share with you a little bit about what's going on. But I want to just jump right in. So in the state of Georgia right now, if you go back, let me go back. If you go back to my episode when Deion Sanders first announced that he was leaving Jackson State, and listen to that episode, I talked about how the attention he brought to historically black colleges and universities was a good thing on one hand, but it could also be perceived as bringing unneeded, unnecessary, unwanted attention, right? And I think for those of us who are careful stewards of these institutions, pay attention to what happens to them in the legislature, we may see that I was a little right. Okay. So I'm going to talk you through some things that are going on with Georgia and Tennessee that I think we need to pay attention to. But before I jump right in, I want to say this. I've mentioned it before. There are things in the United States called legislative exchange councils. The one I'm most familiar with is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. These are secretive networks and legislation mills. So it's groups of people coming together to create policy that are then presented in various state governments. And when the bill works in one place, that it is exchanged with other Congress people throughout the nation. And that's why when one bill comes out and it's successful, you quickly see other states able to introduce similar bills in their houses and senates because they're exchanging the bill itself, right? And we always have to be careful of this. The Republican Party is not necessarily more intellectual or more strategic than the Democratic Party. I think what they are is better organized. That's a side note for another day. And, you know, political science ain't really my thing, but I do think that we need to be paying attention to these legislative exchange councils. And I want to talk about what I see as similarities between what is happening in Georgia and what's happening in Tennessee when it comes to higher ed. So I'm going to just start with here in the state of Georgia, there is a Senate Bill 235. It's considered a bipartisan bill. It was actually put forth by a Democrat, Senator Sonia Halpern, a black woman, who usually I think, you know, black women tend to be above the fray in this kind of foolishness. But I'm getting ahead of myself. When I talk about the things this week's items have in common, I think I can get you there. But it was introduced by Senator Sonia Halpern. And it is technically called, again, it's Senate Bill 235. And the name of it is the HBCU Innovation and Economic Prosperity Planning Districts. It passed the Senate on February 26th, and it's at the House. It's been predicted to pass the House soon. What it does is it creates a commission to, quote, accept public or private grants, devises and bequests, to provide for reporting, to provide for related matters, to provide for a short title, to provide for legislative findings, to repeal conflicting laws, and for other purposes. End of quote. All right. That's a lot. That's a lot, considering that most of the HBCUs in Georgia are not state institutions. Okay, it's 10 Georgia HBCUs. There are 3 state HBCUs. Those three are Albany State University, Fort Valley State University, and Savannah State University. All right, I did those in alphabetical order. Don't get on me about the order I told them to you in. But this particular bill would create a commission. Now, I want to emphasize this, to accept public or private grants and for other purposes. Okay, that almost sounds like, you know, when you sign, for those of us who sign contracts for our jobs, and it has the job description that's very detailed, and then the last sentence is "and other duties as directed," right? So basically, I can tell you what to do. That's how this bill reads to me. Again, I'm not a political science. I'm just a lay person to I'm not a political scientist. I'm just a lay person telling you how I interpret this bill. Okay. It creates quote unquote planning districts. So to me, it sounds a lot like opportunity districts, you know, for those of us who also follow trends in gentrification in urban areas. It sounds very much like that to me. But let me give you more details of Senate Bill 235. The governor appoints three members to this commission, one of which is a current HBCU president. So when the governor submits his three names, and I'm saying his because it's a he right now, when he submits his three names, one of them must be a current HBCU president. And then the Speaker of the House would appoint two members. One has to live in the community that houses an HBCU. And then the president of the Senate would appoint two members, one of whom would be a current HBCU president. And the minority leader of the House would appoint two members. No designation with HBCUs mentioned there. And the senator minority leader appoints two. Again, no mentioning of HBCUs there. This part kind of, y'all know me, so I'm tickled by what I think is the nefarious nature of the rhetoric, okay? Then it says the members, quote, shall be individuals of recognized ability and achievement with knowledge and experience in matters pertaining to HBCUs and economic and community development, end quote. Now, it's interesting to me that they don't define what that means, because it sounds good, right, to say that the people have to have some recognized ability and achievement with knowledge and experience in matters pertaining to HBCUs. But what the hell does that really mean? Does that mean you attended a HBCU? Is that enough knowledge? Is it enough knowledge that you live in a neighborhood where an HBCU is? Is it enough knowledge to say, because remember, the other part of the sentence is with knowledge and experience in matters pertaining to HBCUs and economic and community development. Does that mean you had a contract with the HBCU previously? Like, how are we defining this knowledge and experience with historically Black colleges and universities? Surely it doesn't say anything about commitment to there. I wouldn't expect it to, but I'm just saying. Okay. All right. So then it goes on to say vacancies made by a person moving out of state. So once this commission is set by the elected officials in the state, which we know in the state of Georgia, most of them are going to be in the Republican Party, because I think Senator Halpern got a little duped here, but I'm just going to keep going. Vacancies made by a person moving out of state will be appointed by the governor. So, you know, the governor has the three members that he or she would appoint, right? But not only does the governor get to appoint if someone moves to another state, there is a clause in the bill itself that says appointing officials, because remember, these are different officials appointing different seats. Appointing officials can remove a member for quote unquote good cause, again, without operationalizing what possible good cause could look like. So you could have a situation where people are removed from the commission and then the governor appoints a whole new commission. Hold a pin in that point, okay? But I wanted to get back to the fact that this is creating, using rhetoric that sounds good, right? To alumni, it may sound good to have a commission that's set forth to bring in economic opportunities and innovation into these historically Black colleges and universities. However, I want to remind everybody under the sound of my voice right now who may not know, historically Black colleges and universities do this work already. Okay. Are we clear on that? This is some people have whole careers around innovation at HBCUs. People have whole careers around grant writing and funding at historically Black colleges and universities. And for the most part, again, there are 10 HBCUs in Georgia. Only 3 of them are public. Private schools do this, and I would argue a little bit better than state schools. But here we're allowing the governor to appoint people, the government to appoint people to do this work that historically Black colleges and universities are already doing. Why? Why? All right, I'm going to move on from that, and let's talk a little bit about Tennessee. Okay, in the state of Tennessee, there was a similar conversation happening about funding. TSU is, you know, perpetually underfunded, over budget, blah, 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 blah. And what they decided to do on March 19th, they vacated the board of Tennessee State University, and they'll allow the governor, Republican governor, to appoint new board members. 6 Tennessee senators, all Democrats, voted against the bill, which passed the Senate 25-6. All right. The bill was filed by Kerry Roberts and then amended to vacate the existing board by Senator John Lundberg. And Lundberg pointed to the financial issues that Tennessee State University was having. Now, let me say this about Tennessee and about Georgia. Both of those states are guilty of underfunding their historically Black colleges and universities. And it's interesting to me that in the face of lawsuits, in the face of the DOJ's finding that we have been historically underfunded, the response has not been to make us whole. The response has been to put boards in place that will then control some of the funding that happens at our institutions. Which I like to say, this ain't checkers, it's chess. Uh-huh, they playing in our faces right now. Okay, because how are you going to bring up the fact that you want to do this for financial issues and you're not addressing the money you owe them? And I want to remind you, again, I talked about this on the podcast before. I want to remind you that they brought President Glenda Glover, Tennessee State University's president at the time, before them and questioned her about their recruitment because they had the nerve to put in record that they thought she was stealing students from other Tennessee schools. And my Sarah was bad. She said, "We're not taking anybody. We're bringing them home." All right, Black children who are on the edge about not going to HBCU, I want you to listen to what they're doing to our institutions. All right, they're attacking us left and right. And part of that attack is trying to pull you away from us. Ask yourself why. Anyway, that was a side note. Now, I think it's important to mention that in the state of Tennessee, the Republicans were not unanimous in this bill. You have Charlene Oliver of Nashville. She's a Republican, but a Black woman. Who's asking them to vote against the bill. She actually sits in the district. She's in Nashville, so she's in the district that's affected by this move. The House is set to vote on this on March 28th. All right. So I want you to hold Georgia's bill, Senate Bill 235, in mind with what's going on with Tennessee. And then let me say this about Tennessee. They have another bill pending right now, a Senate Bill 2109, House Bill 2346. And in this stead of the vote happening between the vacating Tennessee State's board and finding out what you're going to do next, there is another bill in place that would then pass the governance from the Tennessee State University's board that is being vacated to Tennessee's Higher Ed Commission. Right. So then it would look more like the USG model here in the state of Georgia, where the state holds the governance, okay, of the state institution. Now, I want you to think about that. Those two issues are higher education specific to HBCUs, but also in the state of Georgia. So let's go back to the Peach State a minute. in the state of Georgia this past week, vouchers were approved. Now, this is not the first time nor the second time vouchers have come up in legislation. Both times they've been knocked down before in previous votes, but they passed this time. And so $6,500 will be put aside for students to use in education. Now, they have some trickery in the rhetoric that says that it's not coming from public schools' budgets, that it's a cap on how much money actually can be used. But $6,500 is a lot of money to come out of money that would ordinarily go to public school funding. Already when Georgia is in the bottom 25% of students' performance nationwide. Now, this money, these vouchers, why are people like me anti-voucher? I want you to move beyond the feel-good rhetoric of school choice, because that's often how it's touted, even by Black people. It's touted as free choice, as school choice. Parents should have some say over the schooling of their children. Yes, parents should have some say over the schooling of their students, but parents should be informed about those choices. And school choice is a fancy way of just talking about defunding public schools, putting the money in private hands. Let me tell you one of the things that makes my teeth itch the most about vouchers. Let's say someone already very affluent wants to use that $6,500 voucher to pay for a parochial education, and I'm an atheist. Whether I want them to or not, they're taking my tax money and giving it to a church. Or let's say it's a school that has some ideological difference that I have. My tax money is still going to fund that. There's supposed to be a separation of church and state. Ain't that what we were told when we grow up? But this would put money in the hands of private schools. What else could the money be used for? We got a whole bunch of people who have no business homeschooling their kids because they don't know A from B from C, right? But the money can be used to support homeschooling supplies. No definition on what that looks like. It can be used for therapy. I'm fine with that, but what kind of therapy? It could be used for tutoring. What you mean by that? Does a person have to be licensed or credentialed? Are you just taking $6,500 from public schools, right, and giving them to whomever wants it? It's a very dangerous game we're playing. And I understand that there are a lot of Black people distrustful of public schools, as you should be, right? But as long as the majority of our students are in public schools, we have to advocate for them to have quality education and to be funded equitably. And what these vouchers will do will not allow for that. All right. On one hand, you've got these Republicans banning books in different places, but on the other hand, saying, here, go do this money with it as you please. Right. There is a kind of hypocrisy afoot and we're not paying attention. So I just want to bring those these three things to the fore for you. HBCUs in Georgia, HBCUs in Tennessee, and this voucher thing. Now, here's what I think they have in common. Are you ready? Paternalism. Paternalism. In all three cases, I think what we're seeing is elected officials who do not trust people to govern themselves according to their own needs. And what they are doing is perpetuating a certain life that they want to exist. Okay, so I think there's some, especially with the HBCUs, what do you mean you're going to come in and solicit funds on our behalf? And you owe us money. How about you solicit the funds you owe us? Solicit yourself to give us the money that we need. Okay, so how is that not paternalism, that you're going to create a board to exist over sovereign institutions? Like, again, I keep saying it's three public HBCUs in Georgia. I can almost understand, you know, they public schools. You do what you, the state can do what it wants to do with them. But these other seven, what do you mean you're going to have a commission? Okay. So I think there's some paternalism happening where we're not being allowed to govern ourselves. That shit ain't new for Black people, but we have to pay attention to how it's coming back around. A lot of things are resurfacing and we have to be prepared for them and we have to recognize them, Senator Halpern. Okay? Because I think the other thing that's happened is what in critical race theory, that's why they don't want you to learn about it, because then you could recognize these things a little bit easier. In critical race theory, there's a concept called sponsored mobility. Right? Old school, we would call this a token. Right? So you find a Black person. You give them a lot of opportunities, a lot of advantages. You school them in a certain kind of fashion. You give them certain opportunities in terms of their career. You present them as an upstanding member of the community that can assimilate into your culture a little bit better than other members of Blackness. And then you convince them that their ideas are better than the Black folk that they are supposed to be serving. And so that's how you can come away with someone creating basically an opportunity district. Let me remind you that opportunity districts in terms of gentrification are never good for the people in the neighborhood. They benefit the business owners who come in and exploit the neighborhood. And you're patterning this bill after opportunity districts. Come on, the name of it is HBCU Innovation and Economic Prosperity Planning Districts. It can't get any more clear than that. And you only fall for that, I think. One is if you're completely ignorant of social systems like gentrification. And two, if you've drunk the Kool-Aid that says these historically Black colleges and universities can't govern themselves well. And the only reason you might believe that myth is because you believe in the pathology of Blackness and you ignore the historic underfunding that has happened to these institutions. I think what these things have in common are legislative exchange organizations. We're seeing the same kind. The voucher bill that passed in Georgia is no different than the voucher bill that has passed in other states. The bill that is sitting with Tennessee only is operationally different from the bill here in Georgia because the system was set up a little differently. So you have to attack the historically Black colleges and universities differently. Okay, but the heart of the bill is the same, to have a paternalistic board that governs what happens to our institutions. Let me just read you some more from the bill. It's to set up an advisory board for HBCU success. It's to provide recommendations and guidance. It's to encourage public-private investments in HBCU. How are they going to do that differently than how HBCUs could do it themselves with more knowledge of their own capacity? Okay. All right. I just wanted to go through those three things and what they have in common and say to you that I'm sick of it. I am sick of it. Let me say this as an HBCU, you know, I like to say your favorite HBCU professor. Let me say this. I am sick of people assuming that everybody at the HBCU is dysfunctional. We are institutions in the real world, which means, yes, we have some dysfunction. Just as all institutions in the world have some dysfunction, but we are not inherently dysfunctional. The problems that we tend to have are problems that other types of institutions have. The issue is that we tend to conflate ideas around Black pathology with the issues we have on campus, and that's unfair. It's unfair. If a business owner wanted to invest in an HBCU, they don't need the state to tell them to do it. And we damn sure don't need the state to tell us how to use the funds without knowledge of what's happening on campus. Y'all, I can't tell you how many consultants come forth and try to tell us how to operate on campus. Now, do I mean that we should never get help from the outside? Hell no, that's not what I'm saying. Experts always seek out other experts to get better. Okay. Good experts seek out experts to get better. That's why you should consider me for life coaching services. But that's that was a shameless plug. Let me keep going. So I'm not saying that we should not get help from the outside. Please don't misunderstand me. Please, if you have a talent and a resource that an HBCU needs, please volunteer it. Okay? So I'm not saying no to outside help. But what I'm saying is, if you come in with the attitude that you know best before you have gathered any information from that institution, you are the problem and you have a saviorhood mentality. That's not what we need. That's absolutely not what we need. Do you know how many brilliant minds sit on HBCU campuses? How many brilliant minds make tremendous sacrifices to be at these institutions because they believe in the mission and vision and potential of the students? And you're going to assume that a governor can appoint a commission that knows better? Who don't know shit about the day-to-day operations of the school to know about student need the way we do? That's what I was going to say about these consultants come in and they tell us how to teach these babies. They don't know the babies. Listen, my colleagues can tell you I have a nasty attitude when somebody from the outside comes in and tells me how to work with these kids and you can't have a 10-minute conversation with the students. You don't know these kids. And yes, I call them kids because they my babies. And that's what that commission cannot do. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying that I know better than a business person about how to run business. I don't. But what I do know is how to work with my students. You can come in and we can collaborate, but you're not going to come in and then tell me how to do this. I just want y'all to think about where that mentality comes from and why it might be a bipartisan bill, because there's a whole lot of people. Some of y'all understand it when it comes to somebody as blatantly disrespectful as Candace Owens, right? You see her and you can say, oh, my skin folk ain't my kin folk. You know to say it then. But I'm saying, can you say it when it's dressed up in Democratic clothing, speaking at graduation, donating money, and still having a very paternalistic attitude towards Black folk with boots on the ground? Can you recognize it then? I'm just saying, be careful. Can we be careful about education? I said I wanted to bring this all together, and I did a little bit, but let me say what I think the heart of this is. In every movement in this country that has been somewhat successful in terms of gaining people civil rights, civic rights, human rights, those movements have always been led by young people. I'm going to say that again. The civil rights movement was won by young folk. Young people. King was young. Malcolm X was young. Fran Hampton Jr. was young. These were young people. Young, educated, schooled people. People who knew how to think and strategize. People with teachers like Ella Baker who didn't want to be the spotlight but taught them to think and strategize for themselves. Snick. Do you understand what I'm saying? And now we see that the attack on young people is coming by way of education. What happens when you take out the heart of the movement? Wasn't that Hampton that said you can kill the man, you can't kill the movement? But if you kill the young people, the movement is gone. And if you distract young people with capitalist aspirations, what do we have left? That's all I really want to say about that. So that's that. Let me move on to something that's a little bit more personal for me. And I'm not going into a whole lot of details here. I probably will on the YouTube channel, which is coming back. If you like the guided meditations, those will be coming back. And I'm going to do a little bit more of the self-care talks on the YouTube channel. I am so upset that IGTV, I can't get to any of my old videos to download. So I'm going to have to, I have my notebook, my trusty notebook with my notes in it. So I'm going to re-record a lot of the videos that were once there. And put those on the YouTube channel. So if you're not already subscribed to the Tell Them to Told You YouTube channel, please make sure you go do that. I'm also starting the one-on-one life coaching again. I had tried to move away from it, but spirit just won't let me. So if you are interested in one-on-one life coaching with me, that is opening. The Shine Professional Development for Black Women in Business to Build Confidence. That it will be coming in mid-April. I think those are the three things I wanted to say. In addition to, I have had some health concerns over the last month or so, which have, I don't want anything, I don't want anybody to be sad or bothered by this, because I'm going to tell you that it has been inspirational to me, which is why I've been a lot more routine in uploading the podcast and in sending out the Monday newsletters. Because here's the thing, y'all. Time is a thing that is walked on by some of us. And I understand that it's finite on this side. I want to be intentional. And this is, I'm not seriously ill. So I don't want y'all to be reading this as some kind of death manifesto. It's not. I'm just trying to tell you how I'm motivated right now. My health concerns, though, have caused me to think a lot about, if something were to happen to me, what legacy would I want to leave? Like, how do I want to be remembered? Hopefully the people that know me best, like my family and my close friends, know enough to know what I have tried to do in my life. But I want to leave a mark that makes it undeniable what I have tried to do in my life. And I think not only for me, but for you too, it is selfish to hold your gifts and talents and give them to procrastination. Right? So I am working towards doing more to share more, not because I think I'm special, but because I hope that it inspires you to do the same thing. Right? Again, on the YouTube channel, I'll probably go more into detail with the health issues. The bottom line is that I'm 50, y'all. I'm 50. And it's like you wake up one day and you're like, damn, I am a middle-aged woman. Like, what happened? I think I saw a video of myself. Once again, it'll hit YouTube because it's a clip of us doing yoga together on campus. But I looked at my body and I was like, I ain't a kid no more. So there is a part of my life that is happening that I am more observant of how I want to model for young women who may have circumstances similar to my own. What legacy do I want to leave for them? Like I'm an educator, so I do think about students and young people in general, but to think about Black women in particular and what we have to negotiate in this world in terms of misogynoir, but also the gifts of being Eve's daughters. Like that is a powerful thing. And I just want to, you know, I want to talk about it with my young sisters a little bit more than I have been. And so there's going to be a slight shift in some of the programming. You've already witnessed some of the slight shift by the Monday newsletters coming out and what I'm trying to do there, trying to start your week off feeling good with the podcast and the regularity and helping us think through connections. Hopefully that's working for you. Let me know, you know, leave me a comment. Is it working for you? And then finally, in reviving the guided meditations in the YouTube channel, I really want, and this will be part of next week's episode, I really want to talk about weathering the effects of racial stress and trauma on our bodies and how that impacts our intellectual abilities and our overall wellness and joy. So those are some changes that are coming on, If you're not on the email list, go ahead and get on the email list so you can get your Monday emails. I'll also be sharing more information through that channel as well. And again, if you're not already subscribed to the podcast, check the show notes and there'll be a link there. All right? That's all I wanted to share with you today. I hope you make it a good one. Tell them to told you.